Hello, my name's Adrian Goldberg and welcome to the Byline Times podcast. The Byline Times, it's what the papers don't say, what radio doesn't report and what telly doesn't tell you. This time, Goldberg investigates for the Byline Times. I'm exploring the offenders caught up in indefinite jail sentences and the tough licensing conditions which apply when they're released, which can see them return to prison without any right of appeal at any time. We're talking about something called IPP, Imprisonment for Public Protection. IPPs were introduced by the then Home Secretary David Blunkett in 2005. They were designed to punish serious criminals whose crimes didn't merit life in jail, but who were still deemed to pose a risk to the public. These prisoners could have their time behind bars extended at the discretion of the parole board, and even after they were released, they'd be on a 10-year licence, which meant they could be recalled to prison for breaching one of numerous conditions. In practice, IPPs were handed out far more frequently than was intended, and they were scrapped in 2012. But the legislation, crucially, wasn't retrospective. This means that over a decade later, more than 1,200 people are still inside, never having been released after being handed an IPP. Hundreds more have been recalled to prison. Among them, this man, who, as you'll hear, was jailed under an IPP, released, and then, astonishingly, put back behind bars when he was accused of a crime he didn't commit. Please be aware that this interview and others which follow contain references to suicide.
My name's Aishuba Salmon, born in Birmingham, and I'm 44 years old. I'm going to be 45 in June the 29th. And now I have a beautiful daughter. She's a big girl. Got a lovely, brilliant family support network.
How did you end up in jail then?
Me and my co-accused, we was carrying a firearm in a stolen car, and the police apprehended the car, and I was convicted and given an indeterminate sentence, IPP, with a tariff of 4 years and 144 days. So minus the time I already done on remand, so that would have been 5 years altogether. I was made to serve 12 years and 9 months behind the door. Like, a lot of punishment. And I never killed nobody. I was on the wing with people who did kill people, and they went home before me. How about that? Because of the indeterminate sentence.
Most of that time, you didn't know when you'd be released. What was that like, living with that every day?
It's not something I can put into words for you.
But it was very, very tough.
That's an understatement.
And you were finally released?
Yeah, in 2018, September. Yeah, that's correct.
And later on, you were then charged for another offence. Tell me about that and what happened.
You mean when my licence was revoked?
Yeah.
My licence was revoked for a false allegation, what was brought against me. Automatically, police just made an assumption that it was me. I was arrested for Section 18 offence.
That's a wounding offence, GBH, yeah?
Yeah.
But you were never convicted of that offence?
Yeah. I was found not guilty, and I was told, stand up, how do you plead to the Section 18 offence? I said, I plead not guilty. He said, I find you not guilty, you're free to go. So then the judge walks behind through his door where he goes, and he's gone. Then the G4S, the court staff, they've opened up the door, and when I've gone to walk out, they said to me, oh, no, no, where are you going? I said, pardon? What do you mean? And they was like, yeah, you got to come downstairs with us first, sign up some papers, and then after you've done all of that, then we'll release you. So I said, what did the judge just say, mate? And said, yeah, the judge said you're not guilty and you're free to go. All charges have been dropped. So I said, bro, so what are you talking about? I said, no. This process, this procedure. So I said, okay, I'm not going to cause a scene or create no big commotion in Birmingham Crown Court. I've been found guilty. And I was elated. I was quite happy. I mean, justice has been prevailed. So, but then we just made a mockery out of our own British court's law system.
Because you weren't allowed to go free. You were locked up again.
Yeah, they put me back in prison, innit, for another 4 years.
And that was because you were under an IPP licence. You were not guilty, but the Ministry of Justice and the Parole Board decided that you should go back into jail.
I was tarnished with a brush, innit, and I was from an area, I told you, Handsworth, stereotyped, and it's just really bad and sad that they're just continuing to do this to black young males. I promise you, it's not no white boys who's getting this kind of treatment, mate. Very rarely. But you know yourself already. I mean, it's not just me, one who's this happened to. There's over 3,000 people inside prison right now, sat down inside prison, because after now, wait for the courts or the parole boards or whatever. And it's disgusting. You can't, we're human. We're not human. This is what it's like. So then, when you do these kind of things to people, how do you think they're all going to react? Everybody's not the same. I mean, each individual is different. I'm just like, I must have the heart of a lion or something, because my mind always just has to stay strong and look at the good and the positive. I know I've got a beautiful daughter. Like, I can't get back my daughter's 17 years, what I've missed out of her life. But I really want her to look at her dad and see a good role model and somebody who she can be proud of. Not some bum who bloody sat down in jail for the rest of his life and wasting away. Man, I don't have no time for that. I want to elevate and do things with my life.
The astonishing story of Ishuba Salmon. At least he is now enjoying his freedom. Not everyone is so fortunate. Matthew Price took his own life last June whilst on licence after being released from jail where he was serving an IPP sentence. West Yorkshire coroner John Hobson sent a Prevention of Future Deaths report to the Ministry of Justice in February, saying that the ongoing impact of uncertainty of being on an IPP sentence was clearly apparent. Emma McClure from SL5 Legal was Matthew's solicitor, and she's been telling me about his case.
So Matthew was given an IPP sentence around 2010 for GBH, and it was a GBH offence against a friend, which is a serious crime. I'm not going to pretend that it's not. But the sentencing judge at the time felt that that merited a tariff of 3 years. So he should serve at least 3 years in custody prior to having the opportunity to be released by the parole board. And he did really well in custody, and he was released slightly after the tariff, but not massively after the tariff, in 2013. And he was then on licence for almost 10 years. There were no issues during that time. He wasn't recalled to custody. He got on with his life. He had a job, etc. But the difficulty came in the idea of the threat of recall remained for him for that entire period of time. And that really played on his mind. And it came to a head around the start of the pandemic sort of time, where he felt that his mental health was deteriorating, and he was under the impression that if he sought help for that, that would be seen as poor coping and he would be returned to custody. And he had evidence for that, because he had an attempt on his life around 2020. And as a result of that, he had more supervision put onto his license. So the restrictions under which he was living increased as a result of him making an attempt on his own life. He got the help, but he has this increased supervision. And then he feels his mental health is dipping again. And this is when he was getting towards the 10-year point. So once someone has been on IPP license for 10 years, they can apply. It's not automatic. They can apply to have their license terminated. And he felt that his mental health was deteriorating again around this, and the pressure and the stress and the idea that he wasn't going to be successful, because he had this evidence that if his mental health dipped, he got more supervision, and his mental health was dipping. And so he wasn't going to lose his license. And he reached out, he wrote a very powerful email to a large number of people, which included a number of law firms, members of the Justice Select Committee, the current Justice Secretary, his probation officer, setting out this sort of Kafka-esque nightmare he found himself in, and cry for help. And that's how I came to represent him, because it turned out he didn't have anyone representing him in relation to his IPP termination.
So this is a really troubling situation then. He has been given an IPP sentence, but nevertheless has been released back into society. He is therefore deemed not to be any immediate threat to his fellow citizens. But because of the terms of the IPP. He's then only released subject to a 10-year minimum license period. And within that license period, he suffers mental health problems, not least because of his concerns about the license period. But when he raises concerns about his mental health, he is then given additional supervision by the parole board, suggesting to him anyway that there is a threat that he might be taken back into jail under the terms of that license.
He'd seen evidence of that threat being very much real, in the sense that his supervision had increased the first time that he made an attempt on his life. And he says about police involvement in his first attempt on his life, and those police officers were surprised that IPP sentences were still a thing, which adds into this sort of Kafkaesque nightmare of it. Like, he's under such strong supervision, but even the people involved in monitoring that weren't even aware that that was the situation he was in. And there were other things with regards to his mental health. As I mentioned, the offence was a GBH against a friend, and he was so concerned about the idea of being re-prison and the pressure of the sentence that he led a very lonely life in the community on purpose. He didn't want to find himself anywhere close to doing anything similar again that would lead him to return to custody.
So he reached out to you and to other people in the legal profession. What happened at that point?
So he got sympathetic responses from some members of the House of Lords, people who were involved in IPP campaigning and part of the Justice Select Committee, and radio silence from others, the Justice Secretary in particular. And I then started to assist him with his termination application, or at least after a period of time, because this was another issue that we had, is that if you're working in any form of paid employment in the community, you are likely to be ineligible for legal aid for assistance with this type of application. And Matthew had had a job. He had left his employment because of his poor mental health, and that meant that he was then eligible for legal aid. So there may well have been some delay in him being able to seek help. I don't know what happened before he came into contact with me, because the fact he was employed and doing reasonably okay meant he was not eligible for assistance from a lawyer for his application. We then had to deal with the issue of delays. There are chronic delays in this system. So the report that had been due earlier in the year to do with the termination application was at that point about 4 or 5 months late being completed, so that we could progress to the next stage. And that was playing on his mind. And the idea that this is never going to change, it's never going to move forward, because it's just issues and issues and issues and delays and delays and delays. And then, unfortunately, it proved to be too much for Matthew, and he did ultimately take his own life.
And the coroner who investigated his death did link his suicide to his IPP.
The evidence that the coroner heard was that every professional that Matthew had been in contact with for years had heard from him that the IPP sentence was causing him mental distress. Again, I keep overusing the word Kafkaesque, but it is Kafkaesque. His mental health is deteriorating because of the pressure of his sentence. It is the fact of the sentence that's causing the mental health decline. But because of the mental health decline, the sentence stays where it is.
Indeed. So he's caught in this horrible cycle. And the coroner, John Hobson, clearly said at the end of the inquest that Matthew's mental health had been adversely affected by the continuing impact of the sentence. So in the aftermath of Matthew's death, then, what has been the response from the Justice Department, the response from the legal authorities? Have they made any changes to the situation?
Since Matthew's death, the Justice Secretary has announced some changes to the IPP licence. They have agreed to reduce the 10-year period to a 3-year period before the first review. And then if the parole board were to decline them at that point, if they are still in the community 2 years later without issue, then that licence would automatically terminate. So it would automatically terminate at the 5-year point. And that is currently within the Victim and Prisoners Bill, which is somewhere through the process of becoming law. And if that were to change, then about 1,800 people would either have their licence automatically terminated or be eligible for an immediate review. Now, I can't speculate as to whether or not Matthew's case in particular is actually part of the nexus of that change. And it's a welcome one. Obviously, it would have, Matthew's license would have terminated automatically if that had been in place when he was alive. But it also doesn't do anything in relation to the 1,200 people who are still in custody. The clock hasn't started ticking for them yet.
And anyone who is released now, who has been serving jail time under an IPP, they will still have a 3-year minimum license period, so may still face some of the pressures that Matthew faced.
Yes, and the reality is, these are people who were told nearly 20 years ago that you've got to serve 6 months, a year minimum before the parole board let you out. These are people who were told that they were not eligible for a life sentence. The sentencing judge will have said to them, I'm thinking about when doing a life sentence, I'm not going to give you a life sentence. We're now almost 20 years down the line where they've been in custody all that time, and then you're letting them out. And the idea that that person is then going to be able to lead a completely spotless life for 3 years. And I'm not talking about committing offences. I'm talking about missing appointments. I'm talking about lapsing into substance use. I'm talking about having an argument with somebody, and that will lead you back into custody. It's a very difficult ask for this class of prisoner.
And although originally the idea by David Blunkett and the Labour administration at the time was that these sentences would be reserved for people who had committed serious crimes that might perhaps be in other circumstances worthy of a life sentence, I've seen anecdotal evidence anyway that some people who've been issued with IPPs for much less serious crimes, including stealing phones.
Yes. So they originally envisaged that the sentence would be given out to about 800 people. Unfortunately, it was given out to closer to 8,000 people, because the list of 153 offences in total that you could receive an IPP for, and some of the offences have a headline that sounds serious, like robbery, for example. But when you actually look at the specifics of the offence that was committed, it's taking a phone from a paralytically drunk person on the floor. There are people with offences like that who are still in custody and have been since 2005. A lot of these people who were given these sentences, they were given very small tariffs and then put into prison in a situation where there was no increase in resources to deal with this new class of essentially life prisoner who need to access interventions to reduce their risk. So most of them went flying past their minimum term, having been able to access nothing for years. And they become understandably resentful and frustrated. Even their lawyers at the time may not have fully understood the implications of the sentence. So as far as they were concerned, they were serving a sentence of a couple of years or whatever, and then they were going to be released. And they find themselves 10 years later, been given no opportunity to reduce their risks. They will start to fall into despair. They will start to use substances. They will even be violent in custody because of this frustration. And then when they come before the parole board, then the parole will go, well, you've been violent, so no. It's the fact of the sentence itself that's perpetuating the risk. A cross-party Justice Select Committee in 2022 recommended that all of these people need to be resentenced. And that was a cross-party view, but no one's as yet prepared to grasp that thorny issue and actually resentence them.
And in the meantime, the tragedy of Matthew Price could happen again, because prisoners who are released will still fear that if they report, for example, that they have a mental health problem, that could lead to additional supervision or indeed further imprisonment.
So the rates of self-harm and suicide between the general population and the prison population is higher. It's much higher in the prison population in general, but then IPPs, it's even higher. And I am aware of at least one other person in the community who took their own life in a similar timescale to Matthew for similar reasons. That person had actually been recalled because he lapsed into alcohol use. He was over 10 years in the community with no concerns. And this will continue to happen until someone is prepared to make some bold decisions in relation to IPP prisoners. Successive governments have recognised for well over a decade now that the IPP regime is a stain on the criminal justice system and needs to be dealt with. But no one's prepared to do anything at the moment.
Emma McClure from SL5. Now, I contacted the Ministry of Justice about Matthew's case. They told me our thoughts remain with the friends and family of Matthew Price, and they said we want to give rehabilitated people the opportunity to properly move on with their lives, which is why we are changing the law to curtail license periods. And they said once the law comes into force, around 1,800 people will have their IPP sentences end immediately. For many, though, the proposed changes to the IPP licensing system don't go far enough. Donna Mooney is a member of UNGRIP, the United Group for the Reform of IPP. She told me about the campaign, and first her brother, Tommy Nicol, who took his own life in 2015 while still in prison serving an indeterminate sentence.
He loved football. He loved cars, which usually got him into trouble. He was very friendly. very social, liked to make people laugh, liked to joke around a bit. He was very protective of people he loved. He liked to be out and about as a teenager and as a kid, hanging around with his friends.
How did he end up in jail?
He got the IPP because he stole a car from a garage. The person in the garage tried to stop him and there was a tussle and the garage owner's arm got hurt. So he got the IPP for stealing the car and hurting the garage owner.
And what was his tariff?
4 years. And he ended up serving 6, which is relatively short in comparison to a lot of people. But I think all of the circumstances and on the lead up to that, he just kind of gave up. Didn't think he was ever going to be released. And so he took his own life a few months after his last knockback. He'd had 2 knockbacks in the parole board. The second one was a few months prior to him taking his own life. You know, he was refused release or progression in that time.
So he was one of those people who was just inside for however long the system decided he should stay inside.
Yeah, it's an indefinite sentence, so there's no end date to it. And he referred to it as psychological torture often. He said it was a 799-year sentence, despite him only getting a 4-year tariff, because that's what's written on the system. There's no end date, really. And even if you do get released, there's no end date. The licence has no end, always 99 years. There is currently a 10-year point where you can apply to have it lifted, but that's often denied. And again, you have to go to the parole board to ask to have that lifted after 10 years, which is quite a long time. I mean, I think it's difficult to get released anyway. So if you do manage to get released, you then have to wait another 10 years to potentially be free. It doesn't happen for many.
Now, of course, these days, nobody's been sent to jail under an IPP, but more than 1,200 prisoners are still in jail under the original IPP sentences. What do you think of that?
Well, the number's actually higher as well. I mean, that's 1,200 unreleased. You've got, I think, 1,600 who've been recalled. I could talk for years about how horrendous it is. I've seen it firsthand with my brother and I live it every day and know what he went through. It's horrific that thousands of people are being kept indefinitely in prison on a sentence that was abolished more than a decade ago. And many of the people on this sentence committed quite low-level crimes. There have been people who were given an IPP for stealing a mobile phone or a coat. I mean, that's not justice for anybody. And it's no wonder that many of the people on the sentence have had a lot of mental health harm done to them and now have mental health issues, or like my brother, end up taking their own life. I think, you know, people on an IPP sentence are 70% higher of taking their own life or self-harming, and that is 100% due to the nature of the sentence, never knowing when you're going to be released, serving a sentence that was abolished a decade ago that the UN calls torture, that most MPs and people in Parliament refer to as staying on the justice system, yet it's still being inflicted upon them.
The Ministry of Justice has told us that they are changing the law to curtail licence periods. And obviously people going to jail today will not be issued with IPP sentences. They say once the law changes around licence periods, around 1,800 people will have their IPP sentences ending immediately. Is that not fair enough?
Yes, it's great for those people who it will affect. Personally and as UNGRIP, we are happy for those people to finally be free of this. However, it doesn't go far enough. The people who are being the most penalised by this sentence, those stuck in prison still, many who have served more than 10 years, 15, 17 years over their initial tariff, it won't affect them because they've never been released. It's not going to impact those people who've been recalled for no further offence. I think 70% of the 1,600 people on recall have been recalled for non-compliance. So things such as lateness, missing appointment, false allegations, they're now stuck in the system again. They don't get released within a set time frame. They have to go back into that process of wait for 2-year parole hearing and still might not even be released. So while change is definitely welcomed and it's great for those people it will affect, it doesn't do anything for those people stuck in the system. And in fact, it probably harms them even further because it just reinforces the fact that they have no hope of getting out. It's kind of perpetuated that pain for them, I'm sure, because the Justice Select Committee did an inquiry in 2022 and their top recommendation in their report was for resentencing, and yet the government have chosen not to do that. And that is, in our opinion and many other people's opinion, the safest and fairest way forward. It's not opening the doors and letting everyone out, like, is having a board of professionals make a decision based on what sentence they should have been given in the first place. The safest and fairest way forward, but the government have chosen not to do that. So, yeah, changes will impact a lot of people, which we're grateful for, but there's going to be a lot of people still left behind.
I suppose the devil's advocate question is that if those people who are still in prison under IPP have their sentences reviewed by the parole board and the parole board deems that they are not safe to be released into the community, then that is making all of us safer.
Well, I think there's many things to look at on that front. If IPP was effective, it would still be in place. Our crime rates would have dropped, which they didn't. So that's one aspect. The other aspect is that release tests for the parole board is dependent on many things, and there are many things that people in prison don't have access to. My brother is a perfect example of this. He wasn't deemed safe to be released by the parole board twice, and their recommendation was that he do a course to help him reflect on his crimes and change his behaviours and stuff like that. He spent 6 years trying to get on those courses, 6 years. In that time, he was denied going on one course because his forms weren't filled in correctly. He was dyslexic. One course closed. His files were lost for another application for a year. And despite him asking every day, he was never told for a year that they were lost because he has to rely on other people to check them. He can't check them himself. That's one example, that's my brother's example. But that is a common trend. The issues with showing that you have lowered your risk, one, it's subjective. I don't think anyone could do that. But if you could, and it's based on these things, people don't have access to the required courses. They living in an environment that is extremely volatile and they can be taken advantage of because of the sentence they're on, or they have to look after themselves in that environment to stay alive. Because of the nature of the sentence, it's caused people to have a lot of mental health problems and some people to have addiction issues, and all of those things feed into how risk is perceived. So put all of those factors together, for anyone in society who's never committed a crime, it would probably be difficult for any of us to get out. So I don't think that is an effective way to manage that. And if we really truly believe that, then why are we letting people out every day from prison where they've probably done far worse crimes than some of these people on IPP without having to do these kind of tests? And many of them don't go on to commit further crimes. Some of them do. I think the key thing that we often say to people is that a more dangerous person didn't exist between 2005 and 2012. A policy did, and that's it. And unfortunately, the people within that time frame are now caught up in this sentence that no government has had the courage to fully eradicate and put a stop to it.
You did win a landmark case in the High Court in relation to your brother's death and secured compensation. I know that will be no compensation for the loss of your brother. But do you take some comfort from the fact that his death has at least pushed the law forward, perhaps not as far as you would want, but further than it was?
I don't know if I take comfort. It's kind of a depressing subject, really, when you see the damage it's caused all around you, to my family, but also to people that I have contact with in the realms of campaigning, and see that being continued. It helped me to make sure that the people in charge of those decisions could see that my brother counted for something, and that he wasn't just a number, and he wasn't this horrendously awful person that they tried to make him look during the inquest. I think it makes more meaning from Tommy's death that some change is happening. But the sad thing is that people are still dying. My drive for coming into this was to stop other people going through this. And actually, that hasn't happened. It's gotten worse. And more people are dying on the sentence in prison and in the community than ever before. The last 2 years, I've seen the highest suicide rates in prison of people on the IPP than ever. So, yeah, I feel that something semi-positive has come out of Tommy's death, but there's a lot of sadness and mixed feelings around that.
Donna Mooney from Ungrip. And if you've got any comments about this story, do feel free to email me, goldbergradio@gmail.com. And if you want to support our work, please subscribe to the Byline Times. It is what the papers don't say, and it's a great read to boot. If you want to find out how to subscribe, head over to bylinetimes.com. That's bylinetimes.com. This episode of Goldberg Investigates at the Byline Times was made by me, Adrian Goldberg, and Harvey White in Birmingham. It's a We Bring Audio production for the Byline Times. We'll see you again soon. Cheers now. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.